Switching to another part of the world now, this is an important religious day for some Catholics, especially those from Mexico and other parts of Central and Latin America. Today is the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. That's when the faithful celebrate the appearance of an apparition of the Virgin Mary, known as the Virgin of Guadalupe, in Mexico City back in 1531. Since then, the image of Guadalupe has become an icon throughout Latin America as a symbol not just of faith, but also of Native pride and resistance against oppression. Here to tell us more about the Virgin of Guadalupe and her feast day is Friar Gilberto Cavazos González. He is a Franciscan scholar and an associate professor of spirituality at the Catholic Theological Union in Chicago. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Is there a greeting I should have used to observe the feast, say, Happy Guadalupe Day or something like that?
Yeah, Happy Guadalupe Day or... Or Viva la Virgen de Guadalupe.
All right, that works.
Either one.
Viva la Virgen. Thank you. And is there a specific celebration that will be observed today? I know, I understand. I just want to clarify. This is the last in the series of 4 days when she's said to have appeared. But how is the celebration observed?
The celebration is observed traditionally by getting up around 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, going to church, bringing flowers, singing songs, praying. There may or may not be a mass involved. At the end of the celebration, tamales, chocolate, cookies, breakfast, basically.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah. Sounds good. Yeah. Now, there's a very specific image associated with the Virgin of Guadalupe. Can you just describe it for people who aren't familiar with it and tell us what the meaning behind it is?
Sure. The image of Guadalupe is the Virgin Mary looking like a Mexican young lady, basically light, dark skin, her head bowed down, her hands in prayer, her knees slightly bent, standing in a rose pink dress with a bluish green mantle with various stars on the mantle. She is standing on the moon being carried by an angel, and behind her are the rays of the sun.
And the meaning is?
The meaning is, first, the skin tone. She's neither European nor Native American. She's a combination of the two. She basically was the skin tone of the new children that were being born of Mexican women who had unfortunately been either violated or seduced by European men. She has the skin tone of the unwanted children of the violent conquest of Mexico, symbolizing that these children are human. They are worthy of being children of God as well. Mexicans take pride in that we are those children of the violent conquest who have been adopted by God. Her hands in prayer and her face tilted. She's telling the Indians, I'm not a goddess, I am the servant of a god. Mm. And at her neck, she wears a cross, so thereby basically proclaiming the god I serve is the god Jesus Christ.
Now, you know, I understand that a lot of the power of the Virgin of Guadalupe story is also about the man who saw her. He was Juan Diego, an Aztec man. Tell us a little bit more about that, if you would.
Sure.
Or about him, I should say.
About him, right, exactly. Juan Diego Cuatlatoatzin is his full name. Juan Diego, basically his Indian name, the eagle that speaks. He was about 50 or so years old. He was on his way to Mass. He was one of the very few natives who had actually become Catholic. And on his way, he's passing by the mountain of the ancient mother goddess when he hears music. And he goes up the hill because he is curious, and he runs into Guadalupe. Obviously, like everybody that runs into the Virgin Mary, they all feel unworthy, and they don't feel like they're up to the task of fulfilling what she would like done. And so he pretty much followed that pattern. And normally she tends to appear to children or to the poor or the oppressed.
Now, I understand, and if you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're talking about the Virgin of Guadalupe, a saint whose feast day is celebrated today throughout Latin and Central America. And our guest is Friar Gilberto Cavazos Gonzalez. He is a Franciscan scholar and an associate professor of spirituality. He's telling us, and an expert on the Virgin of Guadalupe, as you would imagine. Now, I understand that the Virgin of Guadalupe holds a significance, a special significance, even for people who are not religious. Can you tell us more about that?
In Mexico, it is said, you might not be Christian, but all Mexicans are Guadalupan. I was watching a movie last night about Our Lady Guadalupe, and a Spanish archaeologist is in Mexico, and he's dealing with Christians, he's dealing with Jews, and he's dealing with Muslims, all of whom are Mexican and all of whom have some kind of devotion to Guadalupe. Besides being a spiritual and religious symbol, she's also a symbol of ethnic pride. She's also a symbol of revolution against the oppressor. Miguel Hidalgo, the father of Mexico, grabs the standard or the banner of Guadalupe in order to begin the revolution against Spain. And as a result, she becomes a national and secular symbol as well.
Now, I know that the term liberation theology is bandied about, sometimes embraced, sometimes rejected. But sure. Would it be fair to say that the Virgin of Guadalupe is a symbol of those who believe that there should be a special place of prominence and care for the poor and oppressed, that she sides essentially with those who are in need of care, who are on the bottom as opposed to on the top?
Sure. The Virgin of Guadalupe, interestingly enough, is a fulfillment of the Gospel of Luke. The image of Mary in the Gospel of Luke is not a humble servant woman. She's a woman who's determined. She's a woman who's powerful. And in the only prayer that we have of the Virgin Mary to God, she pretty much challenges God to side with the poor, to send the rich away empty-handed, and to make sure that the hungry are fed. Interestingly enough, the Virgin of Guadalupe receives the name of Guadalupe in Spain, which was an earlier image of Guadalupe, and is an image that is said to have been carved by the evangelist Saint Luke himself. Saint Luke has a particular care in making sure that people know that Jesus has a preferential option for the poor. Liberation theology, liberation spirituality picks up on the Gospel of St. Luke and Jesus' preference for the poor and the oppressed.
And Father, finally, before we let you go, taking advantage of your location in Chicago, the center of the United States, as a Latino diaspora has moved around the country, have we seen the veneration of this saint travel along with that diaspora? Has the veneration changed at all since the arrival of, members of the Latino diaspora beyond Latin America and Central America?
Sure. First, we need to remember every American country, including the United States, has a Marian patroness or a patron saint in reference to the Virgin Mary. Here, the Immaculate Conception. And every country in Latin America, including Canada, also has its Marian patroness. Mexico has Guadalupe. Guadalupe, however, has been called by the Pope the Empress of America. She is the patron saint of the whole continent. The Mexican diaspora in the United States and actually in Canada as well, in some ways, is recalling or reminding Americans everywhere, no matter what country, that Guadalupe is our patron saint if we belong to this continent.
That was Friar Gilberto Cavazos Gonzalez. He is Associate Professor of Spirituality at the Catholic Theological Union. He's also a Franciscan scholar, and he was kind enough to join us from Chicago. Friar, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
In Iowa, candidates are seeking an important voting bloc, Christian conservatives. Evangelicals united behind former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee 4 years ago, propelling him to a first-place finish. At least four of the current Republican presidential candidates are trying to be Huckabee's successor, Iowa Public Radio's Joyce Russell reports.
Some 3,000 conservative Christian voters from across the state turned out for a candidate forum at a Des Moines church last month. Like many, John Clark of Esterville is undecided in the Republican race for president.
I would start with Rick Santorum. My second choice would be Michelle Bachmann. I like Rick Perry and I like Newt Gingrich.
So the evangelical electorate is divided this year, even though Christian conservatives say they're more energized than ever. Hundreds of church faithful became politically active for the first time last year. They joined a campaign to oust three Iowa Supreme Court justices whose ruling paved the way for same-sex marriage. But so far, all that new energy has not gathered itself up around one candidate in the race for president. Enter the ad wars.
I'm not ashamed to admit that I'm a Christian. But you don't need to be in the pew every Sunday to know that there's something wrong in this country when gays can serve openly in the military, but our kids can't openly celebrate Christmas or pray in school.
That's Texas Governor Rick Perry. Perry launched his presidential campaign just after a giant prayer meeting in Houston. And organizers of that event have set up private meetings with candidates in Iowa to get more pastors politically involved. Pastor Mike Damastis of the Fort Des Moines Church of Christ attended more than one.
Yeah, you bet. Free hotel, free meals. It's a cheap date for a pastor and his wife. You betcha.
Damastis was also in on endorsement deliberations. The influential Christian activist organization, the Family Leader, and other groups struggled to pick a candidate in the race. Damastis says personality differences made some of the groups peel off, and the Family Leader has yet to make its choice. Their president is Bob Vanderplaats.
Really what we're looking for is someone who's got the right core values and convictions.
Namely, he says, Rick Perry, Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum, and former House Speaker Newt Gingrich.
And someone who can defeat Barack Obama. And I think it's no secret. We're also looking for an alternative to Mitt Romney.
Vanderplaats says the former Massachusetts governor has not been consistent on social issues. Others admit to qualms about his Mormon faith, but Romney has a 42-year marriage to tout, and he has his own ad emphasizing that. Vanderplaats says Newt Gingrich has everything evangelicals are looking for if, in fact, his past is behind him. That past includes marital infidelities and two divorces. Some can't let that slide. A Sioux City pastor is distributing an anti-Gingrich video on the web.
Seriously, I can't stand Barack Obama, but at least he doesn't trade in his wives like used cars.
In a bid to win the evangelical vote, Gingrich on Monday issued a lengthy statement saying his views on social issues align with a marriage pledge the Family Leader is circulating. Perry, Bachmann, and Santorum have signed it. Pastor Damastis still has his doubts about Gingrich.
There's a big unknown there. I mean, he speaks the language, but the fact is that, you know, he used to be Southern Baptist. Now he's Catholic. Those are big transitions to make in your faith journey.
In spite of those reservations, a recent CBS New York Times poll of Iowa voters shows more than a third of white evangelicals favoring Gingrich, with the others far behind. Pastor Damastis is backing Bachmann, but gender is an issue for some, like Santorum supporter Molly Gordon, an evangelical homemaker from Sioux City.
Frankly, I am a woman, but I'm not sure I'm comfortable with a woman as president. Women are just, I just don't know if we're cut out to lead.
One influential conservative went so far as to say evangelicals might have coalesced behind Michelle Bachmann if we were talking instead about a Michael Bachmann. Meanwhile, the Family Leader's endorsement, when it comes, will likely generate financial support for the chosen candidate from evangelical organizations across the country. For NPR News, I'm Joyce Russell in Des Moines.
Criticism against the home improvement chain Lowe's isn't letting up. It started after Lowe's dropped its ads from the reality TV show All American Muslim in response to pressure from a conservative Christian group. Now an online petition has nearly 20,000 signatures calling on the store to reinstate the ads. Lowe's in a statement says simply it is committed to diversity. NPR's Elizabeth Blair has the story.
All American Muslim follows the daily lives of five Arab American families in Dearborn, Michigan.
Dearborn is a whole nother world.
Number one most concentrated community of Arabs outside the Middle East.
Some of the women wear headscarves, some don't. There's a newlywed couple and families with children. There's a police officer and a high school football coach. Lots of TV critics, like Alyssa Rosenberg, a blogger for TheAtlantic.com, really like the show.
I expected it to be, you know, another sort of cheesy reality show, but it's a really diverting, charming domestic drama.
I'm very worried about my wife, Nawal. And the fact that, you know, with this whole pregnancy, she's becoming a little bit more stressed and she's becoming very sensitive to a lot of things.
The conservative Florida Family Association doesn't like the show.
Our concern with All American Muslim is it does not accurately represent the term Muslim, which is a follower of Islam.
David Caton is the group's president.
And a follower of Islam believes in the radicalization, use of Sharia law, which provides for honor killings, mutilation of women, and numerous other atrocities to women.
And when they called for advertisers to boycott, Lowe's pulled its commercials.
This is funny and stupid at the same time.
Imad Hamad is the Michigan director of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee.
This is a series about American Muslims in America. And what he's looking for, they are not in America. If he wants a documentary or a series about extremists in different parts of the world, then the focus and the spin is totally different.
The Florida Family Association sent letters to more than 80 advertisers. David Caton claims that in addition to Lowe's, dozens of other companies have also pulled off the show.
Home Depot was the first company to send an email to us and say, we're not going to advertise again on the program.
Not so, says a spokesperson for Home Depot. Caton also claims Pernod Ricard pulled its advertising. Not exactly, says the liquor company. Both companies say they just didn't have any ads scheduled on any upcoming episodes. TLC says it stands by All American Muslim.
In our culture, we don't normally have a rehearsal dinner. So having that opportunity to have both families come together ahead of the wedding, it's like going to a family barbecue.
An advertising boycott campaign can be harmful to a show that isn't very good to begin with, says critic Alyssa Rosenberg. But she says that's not the case with All American Muslim. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News.
This Sunday's pro football game between the New England Patriots and the Denver Broncos is expected to be one of the most watched NFL games of the season. The Broncos have won six straight, pulling out come-from-behind victories led by quarterback Tim Tebow. Tebow ignites passion among his fans for his poise and rushing ability, if not his passing style. He's also drawn attention for his very public display of his Christian faith. Kirk Siegler of member station KUNC gives us a taste of Tebow mania from Denver.
Love him or hate him, you can't escape Tim Tebow here.
1-102-3, the ticket. You just can't judge the Broncos the way you judge, and Tebow the way you judge other teams.
Hour number three, Mike and Scott, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Yes, Tim Tebow.
Los Broncos siguen ganando, muchos hablando para Tim Tebow como el jugador.
He's on pretty much every other billboard, too. There's even a new local beer called T-Brew, which is not yet on tap here at the Jackson's Hole Sports Bar downtown. General Manager Scott Minshall says since the Broncos started winning, sales have almost doubled on Sundays, and he credits Tebow.
Is there luck involved? Sure, it's unbelievable. I heard several people on Sunday said they were going to start going to church if they saw the Broncos win. Somebody named me may have been one of them.
The Broncos under Tebow have tied an NFL single-season record with three overtime wins, but in most of the games, the former University of Florida standout has done little until he's really needed to, the fourth quarter. And even when the defense shines, or Matt Prater kicks a game-winning field goal, the cameras, the announcers, the pundits are trained on Tebow.
So it's sort of all about him, and not at all about him.
Denver Post football columnist Dave Krieger says Tebow's poise under pressure is impressive, not to mention some of his runs, and that, along with his off-the-field personality, makes for great entertainment and great TV.
It's almost as if someone wrote it that way, because in every Hollywood formula sports movie that you're going to see, it works exactly that way. The good guys are down and out. They have no shot, no shot, no shot, no shot for an hour and a half. And then suddenly, at the end, they come back and triumph. And that's basically what the Broncos have been doing.
But Krieger says at least locally, Tebow mania might have more to do with Broncos fans just wanting to win again. And in this city, full of transplants, not everyone is a Tebow partisan either. At the popular Amato's Ale House, dozens of flat-screen TVs compete with conversations about the Broncos and Tim Tebow. Austin Komnick says he admires the young quarterback's competitiveness, but...
He does the whole praise Jesus and my Savior and all this thing. And honestly, that kind of bugs me. I think you need to separate the two.
But across the bar for Harrison Kirby and his friends, Tebow's very public faith isn't a big deal.
I think he's fun to watch.
Diehard Broncos fan Ben Shapiro says he was as skeptical as most about Tebow until the team started winning.
I'm waiting for this weekend to be the determining factor.
That's when Tebow and his 8-5 Broncos square off against the 10-3 New England Patriots and quarterback Tom Brady, who's not exactly a stranger to fourth quarter comebacks himself or Super Bowl rings. For NPR News, I'm Kirk Sigler in Denver.